We're 29 days away from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. Register today at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You see it more and more often. Well, let's put it this way. You see fewer and fewer children. There's no doubt about that. That fact is indisputable. But more and more pets. And the millennial generation, that prime childbearing generation that right now is, well, having fewer and fewer children and more pets. Is there something going on here? Joining us to talk about millennials choosing pets over children, Shane Morris, senior writer at Breakpoint, a program of the Chuck Colson Center for Christian Worldview, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, Having Pets Instead of Kids Should Be Considered a Psychiatric Disorder. Shane, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Great to be with you.
Why is this so popular among millennials, choosing pets over children?
Well, that's an interesting question. I like to call millennials the dog boomer generation. You know, the Washington Post reported last year that we are, and I'm a millennial, I'm 28 years old, we're twice as likely as the baby boomers to buy clothes for our pets. Pet care is now an $11 billion industry, and that includes products like strollers for your pets, slings for your pets, and even I saw a video with a sort of a nursing cover for your pet, and lady had a bulldog underneath it. She was feeding him little treats. Thankfully, that's all she was doing. There's this new product. It's a rubber tongue you can put in your mouth and use it to lick your cat. There's just this booming industry among millennials in particular, and we have the stats to show that, who are, well, they're just crazy about their pets. And the thing I notice is they're treating their pets like children. There's this theme that continually comes up. The behaviors, the products they buy, the way they refer to their pets and themselves evokes parenthood, not pet ownership.
My daughter works as a dog groomer, and during her time working for one of the big pet companies, that was the term of art. When someone brought their dog in to be groomed, they were the pet parent. Is that what you're talking
right.
about?
Right, exactly right. Somebody posted in response to this article, there's a doggy mom rap with millennial women who are sporting some of these products, and they're carrying their pets around, and they're taking them into, you know, the groomers, and they're talking with them, they're talking about them in exactly that way. There's a couple of artists in Europe I saw today as well who come to your house for a fee and act like dogs crawling around on all fours to entertain your pets so that they don't get lonely.
Okay, so other than simple consumerism, because part of that, of what you've described
right.
there, is just someone exploiting this particular generation's fascination with dogs and cats and other kinds of pets. What's going on in the millennial generation that not simply is willing to be pandered to in this way by smart marketers, but actually, in some cases, prefers or even confuses pets with children?
So here's where the stats really become interesting. Births in the United States right now are near an all-time low. Pet ownership, by contrast, is at an all-time high. It's actually significantly higher than it's ever been. 3/4 of Americans in their 30s or below own dogs, and half own cats. And if you contrast that with the general population, an interesting surge emerges. In the general population, just half own dogs, and about a third own cats. So you've got this juxtaposition of low childbearing rates among my generation combined with a huge surge in pet ownership. So there's something going on here. And in my article, I relate it to a phenomenon I saw growing up. And I grew up around lots of dogs, cats. I was on a farm. And I saw when a mother dog or cat would lose her babies or would just have a strong maternal instinct, she would adopt an inanimate object like a boot or a sock or something and carry it around and lick it and care for it and even try to suckle it. And it's a sad thing to watch because her instincts are misdirected. But the thing that really stings, you know, if you're looking to have puppies or something, is that she directs all her maternal instincts toward that object and will refuse to then have puppies. She won't move on from it. It gets her stuck in this delusion. And I think that's kind of the same thing that's going on with my generation. We're, for whatever reason, refusing to have kids, but then directing those maternal, paternal, parental instincts toward animals, which are not, they can't fill that role.
Talk about practice babies.
Practice babies. So College Humor had this amazing skit where they had a couple come into the OBGYN's office, and he sits down and he says, "Okay, guys, I've got some news for you. I don't know how you're going to take it. It depends on where you're at in life. The good news is you're expecting. The bad news, or however you want to take it, is that it's not a baby. It's a dog. You're going to have a dog." And the couple sort of, they react with surprise, and they act like, well, maybe this is a good thing. Maybe this will allow us to get some practice in, because it's not as much commitment as a real baby. It allows us to sort of get our feet wet, but at the same time, if this relationship doesn't work out, you know, if we break up, we'll only be hurting a dog, and we won't be making a child who's going to resent us for the rest of their lives and maybe end up in prison or something like that. And it's cynical, it's funny, it's dark humor, but it points to what I think is a really obvious phenomenon going on all around us. And I frankly don't see how anyone can deny it, that we've got this widespread substitution going on, to where a lot of my generation, they'll even engage in the practice baby thing, but like the dog or cat with the boot, they just never move on. It just kind of sticks, and they reach 30 and they cross over, and they're still nurturing pets, pretending they're children instead of actually having children.
Just to be clear here, you're obviously not against pet ownership, couples who are otherwise, through no fault of their own, childless. You have nothing against childlessness.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. First of all, I love animals. The only pet I have right now, because we live in a two-bedroom apartment, my wife and I and our three kids, is a parrot, and he's almost 20 years old. His name is Cracker, so he's been my buddy for a long time. But yeah, I grew up with dogs. Pet ownership is wonderful. And in fact, in my piece, I actually talk about how substituting dogs and cats for children actually robs us of the joy of pet ownership, because dogs don't want to be your children. They want to be your dog. They want to run around outside. They want to catch frisbees. They want to do dog things. They don't want to be put in a stroller and have wear a bonnet and so forth. Secondly, I'm absolutely not talking about people who, through no fault of their own, cannot have children. I know several infertile couples. It's a tremendous heartbreak, and their contribution to their communities and to the church is invaluable. I can't stress that enough. And then there are those who, through no decision of their own, are not married. And obviously, as a Christian, I don't believe they can or should be having children. So I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about those who have consciously made the choice to, for whatever reason, delay or forgo kids and replace them with an animal.
I'm intrigued by the practice baby idea. Even if someone is sincere, you know, just no guile, just says, we're not ready to have children, but we're ready to own some pets, and maybe it'll give us some, you know, help us gain some responsibility skills for when we do have children. As you well know, the difference between raising and keeping a pet and raising children is, well, you can hardly call keeping a pet practice for it, because children are an entirely different caliber of responsibility and of relationship. Talk about that.
Exactly right, Todd. As the father of three myself, and the oldest of five kids, I can tell you that animals and children are completely different. And learning to care for an animal is not going to be a significant help in learning to care for a child. If anything, it's going to mislead you. You can't leave a child at home while you go to work during the day. You can't feed a child kibble. You have to prepare more complicated meals. And most importantly, I think a child is an eternal soul who's going to, you know, as C.S. Lewis said, be an immortal terror or an immortal beauty, you know, something you'd be tempted to worship if you saw it, at least in the case of Christians. And dogs and cats can't provide that. But you don't teach them morality. You don't teach them responsibility. You don't really teach them much of anything other than, you know, how to not poop on the carpet and how to obey commands. And so there's not a significant overlap there. And I actually like to say, and this is one of my pet peeves, people think, oh, dogs and cats are easier than children. Well, on the spiritual level, that may be true. But as far as upkeep goes, I've never met a parent who said, last night my child literally chewed the door up, or chewed a hole through the wall, or busted out the window, or my sister, this actually happened to her, her dog ripped all the keys off her laptop. I just don't know of any kids who've done that sort of thing. Kids do terrible things, I know, but that takes some strength.
Shane Morris is our guest. We're talking about millennials choosing pets over children, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Having Pets Instead of Kids Should Be Considered a Psychiatric Disorder. More on the subject with him on the other side of the break then. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us for Christ in the Old Testament. We'll go into Hosea chapter 11.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about millennials choosing pets over children. Shane Morris is our guest on this Thursday afternoon. He's senior writer at Breakpoint, a program of the Chuck Colson Center for Christian Worldview, and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, Having Pets Instead of Kids Should Be Considered a Psychiatric Disorder. Shane, I wonder whether or not there's a darker side to this, and to broach the thornier subject of abortion and an abortion generation. You had mentioned earlier if an animal loses its offspring, sometimes in the environment of the farm or something like that, they will latch onto an inanimate object. And I wonder whether or not that might play a part here for the millennial generation, whether or not a post-abortion mentality might play a part in this.
That's a good point. I saw this meme that sort of darkly satirized that point. It was shared by a Catholic humor page on Facebook. It said, your grandmother had, you know, six kids, they all went into apprenticeships early on in life. Your mother had three kids, and, you know, they all went to college, and now she's hoping for grandchildren, and you have a dog and an abortion. And that was sort of the progression. It sort of illustrated the progression that we've seen going on over the last century from family-oriented to self-oriented, and then filling those nurturing instincts with pets. And I think there's a lot of denial that goes on with abortion, especially. You'll see women at rallies with signs that say, I regret my abortion. And then, you know, the same number of women who are screaming in their faces and saying, how dare you? I had an abortion. I don't regret it. And humans have a way of tricking ourselves like this. We're very good at rationalizing. I do think there's an element of pricked conscience, of knowledge there, that something wrong has been done. And that comes through in sort of the vitriol that I'm getting from this piece, and then that pro-life activists also get when they talk about abortion and the regret that ensues from it.
Go into a little more detail there. What kind of reaction have you gotten to this piece, especially from fellow millennials?
So this has been a fun couple of days. Let me just say that. My Twitter, which has not been very active up until now, it's blown up. I can't keep up with the notifications. I've got people saying just insane things. Some of the best comments are, I got someone said, you, sir, are a total idiot. You don't have dibs on what God has decided for anyone. Someone said, I seriously think you should get psychiatric help. I could recommend a good therapist. This is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever read. You've got brain worms. I would much rather be a master to a dog than a mommy to a kid. And my favorite was this one. This one is just, I have nothing. I can't. I'm just going to read it. Typical Christian trying to force their beliefs on someone. Not everyone likes kids. Get over it. I'm sorry your life was ruined by them. I'm sorry you can't travel the world without worrying about who's going to watch your, and I don't know if I can say this, crotch fruit. But from the looks of it, my dog is smarter than you. Actually, I know he is. He isn't stupid enough to believe in a sky daddy. Referring, of course, to God. So a lot of it's come from the, well, I guess what I'd call the secular quarter. But almost all of it has come from millennials who are more engaged in social media anyway.
The term that you used earlier, and I think we used to use this without any kind of moral qualms whatsoever when it comes to pets, is owner. Or sometimes we'd say master and pet, right. But usually we speak, a more neutral term might be owner. Because after all, I have, I have four cats and a dog. I own them. I do literally own them. The town I live in considers me legally responsible in that. And I can't own more than, I think, three dogs in the town that I live in because that's considered hoarding animals. So if we can return to that relationship rather than parent, what would help this millennial generation understanding their pets as something adorable, lovable, but something that they own?
And Todd, I noticed there you had to think about your number of cats for a moment. Are you in danger of becoming a crazy cat lady?
I have in the past, but not through my own responsibility. It's my daughter bringing home pregnant strays. But
okay, gotcha.
We're down from 11, so four sounds pretty good.
Okay, well, don't feel too bad. I knew someone growing up who brought home stray raccoons and raised them, so it could be much worse. Yes, the ownership of pets is something that we clearly need to stress. And language, I believe that language means things. Language says things about what we believe. It's not just empty words. And when we talk about being a pet parent or a mommy or a daddy or having fur babies or all these little terms that sort of half ironically get thrown out, we're revealing something really critical about the way we look at our pets. People used to own pets. They are property. And there's nothing wrong with saying that because animals aren't people. Animals are things that we own. They do not have the immortal souls that we have. They don't have rights like we have. And I know that's controversial, but I believe firmly in animal welfare. I want to stop animal cruelty, but I don't believe in this concept of animal rights, because if animals have rights, then, you know, we all better stop eating cheeseburgers. There is an unbridgeable chasm between animals and people. You cannot own people. You cannot buy people. People are not your property. Animals are different. Animals, though we love them and care for their welfare and are thankful for the help they give us, the companionship they give us, and the dominion that we can have over them as image bearers of God, nonetheless, they're animals. They're not people. And confusing the two really gets into some what I kind of hyperbolically called psychiatrically disordered territory.
I noticed in the reaction that you, the smattering of reaction that you gave us an example of there before to your Federalist article theme, and that is rather than raising the status of pets, what's actually happened here in their minds is that the status of human children has been significantly lowered, if not lowered below that of pets.
Right. As a father of three, I can't understand this mindset that children are a destroyer of lives. Children will wreck your life. If you have children, you can't do all the most fulfilling things. You can't be happy in life. I'm just angry, they say, that I've got kids and I can't live the sort of party lives that they're living because they have dogs and they can, of course, leave them in a crate. I don't understand that because my kids and my wife are the light of my life. They're everything to me, and they just bring me so much joy. I feel like my life is kind of divided into before kids, after kids, in the best sense possible. So it's difficult for me to understand that mindset. And part of me wonders, is this sort of an internalized, I don't know, regret? It's hard to say. But I don't hate pets. I love animals. I think they're great. But I love my children more. And I think that everyone who can should have children because we need them and people are precious. But the reaction of sort of hatred toward kids as opposed to defending animals or elevating their status, that's really interesting, and I'm glad you pointed that out.
Finally, in that vein, is there perhaps a silver lining way of looking at this, that the millennial generation is in some ways finding an unhealthy and twisted outlet for what is a good thing, that is, as you call it, the instinct to raise children?
So they have the instinct to raise children. That's there. There's something that God designed, he put in them, and it's innate. They can't suppress it or get rid of it fully. We're made to, just as we're made to be children, we're made to be in community, to live in family, we're also made to have children. Our very bodies testify to that fact. And even animals echo that instinct. And when we see them replacing young with inanimate objects, it's sad. We see that instinct there, but it's sad because we know the instinct is misdirected. An instinct that's not allowed to reach its fulfillment is an instinct that's been frustrated. It's heartbreaking to see, even in an animal. But to see it in people and to see animals becoming the recipients of all that nurturing and affection is, I think it's something we need to talk about, because for so many of the millennials doing this, it's not too late. There's time to sort of change and to reestablish pets, animals as what they are, to enjoy them for what they are, but at the same time to recognize that, look, children are, to borrow an obvious song lyric, the future. And if we pour all our investment into the living equivalent of a rubber boot, our instincts are misdirected and we're not fulfilling our God-given purpose.
Shane Morris is senior writer at Breakpoint, a program of the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "Having Pets Instead of Kids Should Be Considered a Psychiatric Disorder." You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Shane, thank you, and I suggest you put the parrot in your will because it'll probably outlive you.
He probably will. I have no idea when that bird is going to die. Thanks, Todd. It's been great.
When we come back, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us. Our series, Christ in the Old Testament. We pick up where we left off in the book of Hosea, chapter 11. Stay tuned.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In Western societies where the most basic notions of right and wrong are not only denied but actively suppressed, recovering a biblical and distinctly Christian understanding of the natural law is absolutely essential.
Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Traditionally, Christians have understood that man is not born a blank slate just waiting to be programmed like a machine. We are moral creatures whose imaginations are darkened by sin. Yet every person still has a basic understanding of right and wrong, because God has revealed it to us in his creation through natural law. Denying the vital role of natural law has grave consequences, not only for society, but for the church's crucial task of proclaiming the gospel.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wolf making the case for natural law Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org.